You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, January 21st, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, independent senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders. Also on the program today, director of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, Adam Green. Both on the State of the Union and where we go from here. And then later in the program, we'll be talking to the great Charlie Pierce from Esquire magazine. Hold on one second. I think we have Senator Sanders. Senator Sanders?
I can fetch him through.
Okay, that'd be great.
When you're ready for him.
Yes, right now.
Okay.
Thanks. All right, folks, bear with us. We don't have the phone system that we want. This is the great...
I love this break music.
Yes.
This is terrific.
There you go.
And I would just like to say, before Senator Sanders comes on, I know.
There you go.
Okay, thank you. Senator Sanders.
Yes.
Hi, it's Sam Steeder. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Sam.
So, first off, let's start with your reactions to the State of the Union last night.
I thought, overall, it was a good speech. I think the president made the uncontrovertible point that the economy today is much better than it was 6 years ago. 6 years ago, we were losing 700,000 jobs a month. The deficit was $1.4 trillion, and the financial system was on the verge of collapse. Today, we are doing better, and I think it's very hard for anybody to deny that. But the not-so-good news is that today we are continuing the 40-year decline of the American middle class. And I think, as most listeners know, there are millions of people working longer hours for lower wages. Poverty is almost at an all-time high, and we are experiencing an obscene level of income and wealth inequality. So we have made some progress over the last 6 years, but for the average American worker, the conditions of today still are pretty dismal.
What do you make about the president not using the word poverty? I mean, not speaking or talking about any proposals that deal with poverty. I mean, what is behind that?
Well, I can't tell you what the president's motives were, but I can tell you that we have today more people living in poverty than almost any time in American history. And a lot of people who used to be in the middle class have, in fact, slipped into poverty. The president also did bring forth a couple of proposals which, in fact, would address the issue of poverty, including making child care more affordable, which is a terribly important issue, and expanding the child tax credit, which also would help low-income people.
One of the things that struck me during the speech, I mean, towards the end, he returned to that 2004 Democratic Convention theme of some sense of there is no red America, there is no blue America. There was a quality to the speech at that point. The one thing that I think, as he was sort of talking about both parties crossing the aisle and getting together and being able to pass something, the one thing that sort of resonated with me that really does have a chance out of all the things he mentioned, is one thing that I'm not terribly excited about, and that is fast-track authority to push the TPP and the TTIP, I believe it is, or the TIPP.
Well, Sam, what I would say is a couple of things. I'm not as unconfident as many that some of these proposals may not go through, but that has everything to do with the American people at the grassroots level getting involved. Poll after poll suggests that the American people certainly agree with the president, that at a time of massive income and wealth inequality, it is absurd that we have large corporations who in a given year, very profitable corporations, don't pay a nickel in taxes because they take advantage of these outrageous loopholes. Do most Americans think that that's a good idea? No, they don't. Do most Americans understand that today college is impossibly unaffordable for so many and that we should move forward to make the first 2 years of a community college, I would go further, free? You know, I think most Americans think that's a good idea. So interestingly enough, if you look at the proposals brought forth by the president, which says that the wealthy and large corporations should start paying their fair share of taxes so we could help working families in the middle class, people say, yeah, that's a good idea. But what I think we have to do is rally the American people to put pressure on the Republicans so that they, in fact, do what the American people want. Now, in terms of this Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement that you refer to, I agree. I happen to be a senator who has both in the House and the Senate voted against virtually all of these trade agreements, NAFTA, CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China. And I think the votes that I cast were the right votes, because I think history will record, and the economists tell us today, that these trade agreements have cost us millions of decent-paying jobs, with companies shutting down in America, going to China, going to other low-wage countries. So why the president wants to continue a policy of failed trade agreements and carry it forward is beyond my understanding. I think it's a bad idea, and I will oppose it.
Do you have a sense of where your colleagues, both in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party in the Senate, anyways, where they stand on fast track? I mean, it seems to me, at the very least, those advocating against this trade deal and those who are advocating for it seem to see fast track as the linchpin, because that that will determine whether or not this thing gets a full airing.
Well, more importantly, it's because in the Senate you're going to need 60 votes for fast track. And to pass the trade agreement, you'll only need 50 votes. So if fast track is going to be stopped in the Senate, if this trade agreement is going to be stopped in the Senate, it will be stopped with the fast track proposal. And I think the other argument against fast track is the incredible lack of transparency that has been involved. No member of the United States Senate can walk into the trade representative's office and say, look, here is my trade expert. I want to take a hard look at this proposal. I want to copy down some of these proposals. I want to examine them. You can't do that. What you can do is walk into the office without any staff, without the ability to copy any of the information. So I guess if you have a photographic memory, you can memorize thousands of pages of complicated legalese, you'd be in good shape. But it's an absurd proposal.
I mean, it's being treated as if this is some type of a national security situation.
Right. And, you know, that's right. And it's not. It is an agreement that will impact the lives of, I suspect, millions of American workers. And there are other implications in it as well about issues of sovereignty and whether states and the federal government can make decisions without having those decisions overridden by international courts. It will impact low-income countries as to whether or not they can get affordable prescription drugs. There's a lot in this agreement, and the idea that we have a fast-track process which doesn't allow members to thoroughly examine the agreement before they vote for fast-track is unacceptable. But to my mind, you know, what the speech was about, I think a lot of good ideas in it yesterday, ideas that the American people support. I think this TPP idea is a bad one. And we'll go from there.
Lastly on that TPP, I mean, if my audience wanted to apply pressure, where would that pressure be best applied? I mean, do you think that it's going to be Democrats or Republicans who might be most likely to stop fast-track authority?
Okay, that's a good question. I think it's both. I think in the House it is there are a number of Republicans who are opposed to it, including a majority of Democrats. Sam, I've got to run. I got to get to the floor.
Okay. Well, Senator Sanders, thank you so much for your time today. Genuinely appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Didn't know how much time I would have with Senator Sanders. Had a had a couple other questions to ask him, particularly on Citizens United. We are now today is the 5-year anniversary of Citizens United, and I know that Senator Sanders has some pretty strong feelings about that. One of the questions that I would have asked him maybe next time was, and this will be something that I think we'll discuss with our friend Adam Green, who we're going to have up next in just a moment. What struck me about the return to the talk of inequality last night in President Obama's speech is that this was something, and not just that President Obama, not that that just that President Obama spoke about, but also that we heard this from Republicans. I had, I was working last night as far as I was concerned. So I watched Joni Ernst's rebuttal, or I should, let me qualify that. It was not a rebuttal. It was her own speech that had nothing to do with the State of the Union, just so happened to be called a response. But then she said, well, this is not a response. This is something different. It was indeed.
This is just a little something I cooked up.
Right. This is just a little something I've wanted to get off my chest for a long time.
Bread bags. And President Obama's a very nice man, and he says things that are good and stuff. But the problem is socialism.
We will get into Joni Ernst. I found her fascinating. And I think that she is actually, the bar was pretty low. Let's face it. If she gets through that speech without having to drop out of camera frame to take a chug of water, to come out looking like Bobby Jindal, who seemed to literally shrink in his suit during the whole thing.
Bobby Jindal is the most awkward human being in politics.
I'm just saying, like, the bar was incredibly low, and she did surpass it. And I'm not convinced that most Americans realize that she's actually... Someone tweeted me the best. There are five. Referring to the number of Cylons in Battlestar Galactica, because I think that like she clearly was an early model Cylon. Let's put it that way. But nevertheless, then you had Rand Paul and Ted Cruz. They gave their rebuttals. This guy Clausen from the Tea Party who gave his rebuttal. There was also the Spanish version of Joni Ernst's speech, which I think also counts as a response, identical, but for the fact that because the guy was Spanish, he said the words immigration in it. We will talk about all of this later. But I was struck by the fact that at least Cruz and Rand Paul really took the time to talk about wealth inequality. And what strikes me is, why did the Democrats give up on campaigning on wealth inequality not quite this time last year, somewhere around March, I guess it was? They had basically laid the groundwork to talk about it. This was going to be their 2014 banner. And I think I saw some accounts that said it was because it was pissing off some of their donors. Or then people later tried to say that, well, it didn't poll well. And I've complained about this in the past. The Democrats decided to run against the Koch brothers, and that's all well and good. I think the Koch brothers are horrible people, or rather, I should say, they do horrible things to the country. I don't know them as individuals. But at the end of the day, it's all well and good to say the Koch brothers are bad. But how about dealing with the problems in America? The Koch brothers could, if you built a machine that was something that would send people to a parallel universe, and you were able to transmit the Koch brothers to a parallel universe. So they were no longer in our universe. I don't know why you'd have to go through all the trouble to do that, but just bear with me. All of these problems would remain. And then what would the Democrats have campaigned on? Well, we spent all our efforts on building that that machine to transmit people to a parallel universe. We were successful in removing the Koch brothers, but yeah, that's all we got. No, they stopped. And if anything was clear last night, because we know a lot of these things, I mean, this is really much more about President Obama setting up for 2016 election. If anything was clear about last night was that this stuff resonates, or at least politicians seem to think it resonates in both parties. And yet we didn't see it in the run up to 2014. And I would imagine that a lot of that has to do with, I don't want to upset my my wealthy donors. I don't want to hurt their fee-fees. Speaking of fee-fees, I don't know if we're quite ready for Adam, but all right, we should replay. Should we do this as
I don't know where you're going, Sam, but I think I like the sound of it.
Okay, let's just obviously Michael's favorite moment last night of the speech.
Michael's obviously the most astute member of this team.
President Obama, last night they had released the President's State of the Union address. Now, usually in the media, we get this and it's embargoed. You can't print. You can only print like certain segments of it. And that's the way it's been in my experience, at least in my 10 years, 11 years in radio now. But last night, the White House sent out excerpts, but then printed the whole speech online. They posted, I think it was on Medium. And so everybody in the country could follow along. And you're, you know, suddenly my ability to predict what he was going to say next, it became a little bit less special because I couldn't impress my wife and my anybody in the house. But what was interesting is he had one deviation. And Michael and I are going to now reenact that situation because this exchange has dominated the conservative response. Not about the policies, not about anything else. It was how mean President Obama was last night. And now Michael and I will do a little playlet to show what exactly happened.
I don't have another campaign to run.
Whee! Yeah, you don't!
Oh, I remember them. I won both times.
What were you feeling? That was not appropriate. That was mean. How do you know you won both times? You're being so cocksure of yourself.
That is the perfect distillation of every dynamic. Like, he does a line, which is, incidentally, the bridge in the speech, that's the beginning of an olive branch line.
Totally.
And they go, yeah, no more Obama.
No more Obama. You can't run again.
And then he's like, yeah, because I won both times. See, I can give as good as I get.
Well, he hurt my feelings. Why did he have to be so mean? He's the president. He shouldn't talk like that.
Let alone the first black president. Now I'm intimidated. Yes. It's like they're in class, and he walks in, and they're like, Obama, weird name. You have big ears, and your dad's from another country. Ha, ha, ha. And then finally he's just like, yeah, nice shoes. Where did you get them? The discount rack at Foot Locker? They go, Mrs. Smith, Barack Obama's bullying us again.
And the thing is, as soon as he said that, I didn't tweet this. It's one of the few things I didn't tweet out last night was like, this is going to be what they talk about, how he has denigrated the office by having this quip during the State of the Union. Never before. And that when you combine, without saying the words Al-Qaeda, which is the special code ring thing that you have to articulate in any speech you give now, the State of the Union. If you don't mention how special Al-Qaeda is, He said terrorism, but he didn't say Al-Qaeda. Those are the magic words that make Al-Qaeda disappear.
By my count, one mention of the trannies, no mention of the Al-Qaeda, and hating America every second of it. That's Barack Obama. Oh, and now he's mocking me. That was so disrespectful. I was just trying to calmly and civilly explain why Barack Obama hates America and wants to destroy our freedom and security, and he makes a joke at our expense.
I'm going to do every Fox News. On one hand, he said that we could work together. On the other hand, he made a really mean comment about winning both elections. This mixed message really upset people, I think.
Barack Obama smells. His dad doesn't live at home, and he's a loser.
Yeah, well, nice shirt. Mrs. Smith! Barack Obama's teasing us again.
I'm sorry. That was just such a great moment. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Adam Green, and then later we'll be talking, of course, to Charlie Pierce. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program. He's the the executive director of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, the PCCC. Adam Green, are you the executive director?
I'm the co-founder, actually standing here with my fellow co-founder, Stephanie Taylor.
Co-founder, guys don't have like any other title beyond that?
Yeah, we hang loose, my friend.
All right.
That's the way. That's the progressive change. No right. fancy titles. Adam, I want to talk about the polling that the Progressive Change Institute did. It is a fascinating poll. I don't know if you have this. These results are online at all, but
They are. I didn't realize that's what we're talking about today.
Well, I understand.
I came with a movie recommendation, actually. Is that wrong?
No. Well,
Juno.
I mean, Juno.
Juno.
Really?
Check it out.
Little late.
Really?
Seen it. Well, I want to talk about that polling. It's fascinating, and we'll link to it. But let me first get your response to the State of the Union last night, just in broad strokes.
Well, it was certainly an improvement. You know, past State of the Unions have put the entire progressive world into panic, causing us to waste months of our lives scrambling to defend Social Security from cuts and stuff like that, trying to bolster the public option when the president didn't quite give it a proper voice. And this one was certainly a step in a new direction, a big step in the direction of economic populism, you know, with the exception of his hat tip to free trade. You know, by and large, my general sense is that this State of the Union is kind of the capstone in our side winning the rhetorical fight, and somewhat the fight for the battle of the soul of the Democratic Party rhetorically when it comes to, you know, Wall Street Democrats versus Elizabeth Warren-style economic populist Democrats. The big issue I see going forward is separating those who only engage in economic populist rhetoric because they realize that that's where the country is and it's a smart political move, and those who actually put forward big, bold, progressive ideas, things that will actually be game-changing in millions of people's lives. I feel like that's the new division, kind of small ideas versus big ideas.
Interesting. And I mean, what did you make? I mean, this is what I was just saying before we spoke, is that not only did President Obama come out and address wealth inequality, you had Rand Paul and Ted Cruz doing it too. And, you know, this gets to your point in terms of, I guess, whether or not it's just about the rhetoric, because the Democrats seem poised to run on this, in the spring of 2014, and then it all went away, I guess, presumably because their donors didn't like it. I mean, it seems to me to be convenient for Democrats right now to take these positions. How do we get a sense going into 2016? Who's really, I mean, what are the mile markers that we should be looking for going forward?
Yeah, so a couple things. So one is, do they actually put forward specific proposals as opposed to just saying we need to help people's wages and help the middle class? But, you know, really, it's in the specifics. So first, just to give you a sense of scale, you know, the president's tax proposals that were leaked before the State of the Union, that were talked about a bit in the State of the Union, were to the tune of $300 billion over 10 years, you know, $30 billion a year. That's actually not a game-changing amount, right? In our poll that you referenced, the Progressive Change Institute, the Progressive Change, the PCCC sister organization, you know, the poll asked, you know, would you support $400 billion a year in major infrastructure jobs spending, right? And that was overwhelmingly popular, right? Even among Republican voters, that pulled through the roof. And, you know, just there, it's like one small kind of down payment on the type of, you know, scale that one could contemplate and it tests well. But there's a real question about will Democrats embrace it.
Let me just give the numbers on that, because I was yeah. really struck by that. This is the question. Invest $400 billion per year in a major new jobs program that would create 4 million jobs by making long-term investments in rebuilding our transportation infrastructure, expanding internet access, increasing clean, renewable energy. Democrats, 91%. I'm not shocked by that, although that's a pretty high number even for Democrats. Mm-hmm. Republicans, 55% to 28%, with 16% I don't know or neutral on it. Independents, 61% to 28%, with 10% who are neutral on it. I mean, this is a no-brainer.
It's not close. It's not even close, right? So, you know, this is actually an idea that was submitted to a process that the Progressive Change Institute ran for the last month called the Big Ideas Project. and it was submitted by Damon Silvers, the policy director of the AFL-CIO. And surprise, surprise, thousands of people voted for it. It made it into the top 20, and we put it in the poll. You know, my guess is that most Democratic pollsters aren't asking questions like this, right? So part of our challenge, and really what the PCCC and the Progressive Change Institute and others will be doing for the next 2 years, is thrusting big, bold, progressive ideas like this into the center of the national debate. One kind of benchmark along the way is making these ideas credible by the end of 2015, such that candidates will actually run on them in 2016 and feel empowered to make the case to voters, actually educate the voters in 2016.
And we should say
2017. That's our next big governing opportunity.
And we should say that this is a poll of likely 2016 voters. So this is not we saw this dynamic in the off-year election where Democrats would win if you actually had a different if you had a 2016 turnout. I mean, this is likely voters. So this is not just registered voters, not just average people. This is everybody who's likely to vote, which makes it that much more powerful when you hand this over to a candidate running either for re-election or for election the first time. And this is what was interesting. There was an interesting piece Brian Beutler had in the New Republic where he talks about David Frum writing that this is that President Obama's speech, to the extent that it went in the right direction when we talk about populist policies, was a way of hemming in Hillary Clinton, who is by all accounts going to be running in 2016. And by hemming her in, not letting her move to the mushy middle, whereas Brian Beutler suggests that, look, you've got a campaign that's going to be run by someone who's coming out of the Obama White House. This is the camps between President Obama and Hillary Clinton's potential campaign are quite close, that this is him setting up her election. To the extent that, I mean, which one do you subscribe to? And to the extent that you subscribe to Beutler's theory, how heartened are you by that Clinton may be running on that message?
Yeah. So, again, I'm pretty sure that she and others will try to run on it, something that sounds like an economic populist message. And my understanding is that so far her rhetoric is going in the direction more of let's lift wages for middle-class families than, you know, challenging corporate power and breaking up the big banks and stuff like that. So there might be some pressure needed to move her there. But again, I think we're winning the rhetorical war. We're winning the war for the direction of the Democratic Party, the trajectory. The question is, how quick can we move? How big can we make the ideas? You know, one thing that President Obama did that was immensely helpful, possibly accidentally, to some of our plans, is offering free community college. You know, Elizabeth Warren made lowering interest rates for students a mainstream Democratic position. Her last bill on this got 58 votes in the Senate, meaning that it's now time to think bigger and go beyond interest rates into, you know, how do we truly make college, the base college costs, more affordable? And the folks at Demos have been doing great work on the idea of debt-free college. That should be the national goal. Anybody who goes to college should be able to leave there debt-free so that really progressive people don't have to go into, you know, a corporate world to pay off their loans, so that people aren't saddled with debt for decades of their life. And, you know, we were thinking about how are we going to get this into the mainstream this year? Well, when he offered free community college, that really pumped oxygen in the room and set up us and Democracy for America and Daily Kos within 24 hours to launch a big campaign on this. Now, I'll say that we ended up polling both of these questions in the poll that you referenced. And, you know, free college education was very popular, pretty much 2-to-1 popular. Let's see, it was
71% supported the idea of debt-free college. You asked the question twice, and I want to ask you about that. As to what in the first question, 71%, 19% opposed. Democrat, Republican, and Independent all supported it by substantial majorities, and you asked it again. I mean, the first time you asked it was provide federal financial assistance to states to make public colleges and universities more affordable so that all students have access to debt-free college education in America. And so that is that does what? That basically provides how is that different than provide financial incentives to state colleges to ensure they all have debt-free?
So real quick, two things going on here. So there's actually three questions in the mix here. One is testing free community college versus debt-free college at all public universities. And the big takeaway there is that while free community college was popular by 63 to 27, debt-free college at all public universities was popular by 71 to 19. That pretty much moves our advantage from a net 36 points to a net 52 points, basically a 16-point pickup. So the message to the Democrats and progressives there is going bigger is actually more popular. You don't lose people by going in a more progressive direction. You gain people. The second thing that you're addressing is actually some message testing that we did, not just on this question, but on multiple questions, including fair trade and including how we frame some various tax cut issues. And I encourage people to go to the poll, and I'll tell them the link in a second. But what we want to do is, you know, ask the same exact policy two different ways. One, federal financial assistance to the states to make public colleges and universities more affordable. That was intended to be a little bit more wonky, to be very more, you know, a little bit more blatant about how this is federal spending. And we, you know, our guess is that that one might lose out a little bit. The second one was just provide financial incentives directly to the colleges. Now, as it turns out, the one that was just upfront about the fact that this is new federal spending, giving it to state government to subsidize public universities, that did 14 points higher. So it's really useful as a rhetorical message for anybody who wants to talk about this to look at the polling we've done on this and other issues and both see what issues are popular but also how to talk about them. And let me just give people a link so they have it. Again, this is at the Progressive Change Institute website, thinkbig.us. And then if you just do /polling, you'll see a PDF to very detailed polling results.
All right. We'll obviously put a link to that at majority.fm. I mean, I guess the next big fight, and you know, I spoke to Senator Bernie Sanders about this, but I'm curious as to what from your perspective at the PCCC, the big fight. I mean, you mentioned early on that you know this is one of those state of the unions where progressives don't have to run around and play defense. There is one area, it seems to me, that's coming up where defense is going to be necessary, and that is on this notion of fast-track authority. Give me your sense of what you guys are anticipating happening. And I know you polled transparency in trade negotiations. That was 66%. There's, you know, I don't know if that one with, I guess, a plus 44%. But I mean, what about what's actually in this thing? I mean, what is the best way to stop this?
Yeah, so we pulled two things. One was transparency, but even more, you know, that was, you know, making sure that corporations aren't writing this behind the scenes, and you know, more transparency won 66 to 23. But the main thing that I would point you to and the main way we should be talking about this is the question that says we should replace free trade deals that cost American jobs with fair trade agreements that force our trade partners to respect America protections for workers and the environment and that will protect jobs and higher wages in America. You know, 75 to 11% popular, even among Republicans, 73% to 12%. So that's a winning message talking about fair trade. And, you know, that's what we have to talk about. We have to talk about, you know, the stuff that Obama acknowledges, which is that past trade agreements ship jobs overseas, and you know, make any politician who ever wants to vote for any kind of trade agreement demand, you know, have a line in the sand that says only if we have extraordinary protections for the high standards that America has set for ourselves in terms of worker protection and wages. So that's kind of the messaging point. The how is a trickier issue, partly because this is such a process-y question and most people aren't engaged in it. But this is where I think a lot of local organizing will come into play. There's some Republicans that represent some union-heavy districts or manufacturing-heavy districts where we really need to organize in their districts. And you know, we're going to be doing a ton of meetings on Capitol Hill the next couple of weeks, and we're going to be talking specifically about these issues, trying to pretty much put the win in the sail of Democrats who are thinking about fighting on this, so that they really kind of fight with backbone and know that there's a large section of the public that will fight by their side.
I mean, this is one of those things. This is sort of like the classic Joe Lieberman situation, where there was a couple of votes where Joe Lieberman would vote for cloture. In other words, basically short-circuit a filibuster and then vote against the bill and trumpet that he voted against it. This seems to me to be one of those situations when we talk about fast track. I mean, because fast track, like no fast track is very difficult to get people who are not paying a lot of attention to what's going on involved in. And by the time you get to actually voting on the bill, like Bernie Sanders said, you need 10 less votes essentially to pass the thing in the Senate. And that's where those people who are on the margins can say, well, I'm going to vote against it. But they voted for fast track authority, which is basically an abdication. I mean, give me your sense of because it strikes me the way to fight fast track is simply to go on to Sean Hannity's thing and go, are you really going to give President Obama this dictatorial authority over trade? I mean,
that's a great point. That's a great point. Yeah, no, I mean, we're really on the front end of kind of thinking strategically about this. But I think the point you just made is actually pretty good. Strategically, you're right that fast track, again, it's the most wonky fight. It's processy. It's the hardest to engage people around, but it has the biggest consequence, both in terms of lowering the threshold of votes needed in the Senate, and also, you have the most leverage if you're in the middle of a negotiation. You have leverage if you're trying to kill a bill when it's a final bill and it's just an up or down vote, right? And that's basically what fast track does. It says take it or leave it. There's no chance to change it. That's something we saw with the healthcare fight as well, when people who wanted the public option couldn't vote against the final healthcare bill. We didn't have much leverage to change it. So I will keep you up to date on what we learn on Capitol Hill the next 2 weeks as we do a very robust set of meetings, but. I think your appealing to the right strategy is actually pretty intriguing.
Okay. Well, there you have it, folks. Adam Green, thank you so much for joining us. I know you've got to run. You have constant meetings.
Got to run. Again, let me just say the link for folks. Thinkbig.us/polling is where you can get the polling that we talked about. And one last thing before I go. I know that we've talked about this on the show before, how I'm a dues-paying member of the Majority Report. I wanted to make an offer to folks out there.
Ooh.
The PCCC has a number of stickers that say, I'm from the Elizabeth Warren wing of American politics. And the first 10 people who sign up for a subscription to the Majority Report and tweet at me, at Adam Green, saying that you got it, we will send you a free Elizabeth Warren wing sticker. So if that's any extra inducement, do it today before other people beat you to the punch.
Wow.
Looks like I'm going to have to become a member of the show.
There we go.
We just got Matt to finally sign up.
It's the first time I've actually listened to anything that's been said here in like months.
Wow.
It's a great idea.
We heard free stickers and we popped
There you go.
Elizabeth Warren wing of American
politics.
She's
from Massachusetts, right?
Put it on your laptop, put it on your car, tweet at Adam Green, let me know, and we'll send you one of those.
Sweet.
Thanks a bunch, Sam.
All right. Thank you, Adam. Yep. Always a pleasure. Adam Green, folks, and that is thinkbig.us/polling. We, of course, will link to that at majority.fm. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to head into the funner half of the show, and we're going to be talking to Charlie Pierce. And, folks, don't forget, podcastawards.com. We need your nominations in news and politics and in People's Choice. Just head over there. It'll take you a second. If you're a freebie and you want a membership, this is the time to get it. Tweet to Adam Green. Tell him that you're signing up, and they'll send you a sticker.
Remember, in the Podcast Awards nominations, type out the Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And we will have a link to that, of course, on the front page. We'll be right back. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Charlie Pierce.
Hey.